Chapter 35 Ghosts. I stood in the center of his old shack and searched for some piece of myself. I found nothing but an old table, a few jars, a night pot. The roof had fallen in at some point, covering the bed in rotten wood and dried grasses that puffed airborne into dust clouds when disturbed. Piles of animal scat strewn all around, and walls turned gray with age. I do not know what I expected to find there, but I was looking for whatever it might be. Some piece or shred, something that would have made Udo feel like more than a name. "When had that happened?" I whispered. Then, realizing I'd spoken out loud, I waited for Irpisha to ask what I meant, but she did not. She must have understood. I'm sure she heard me. When she didn't ask me to clarify, I did so anyway, to myself. It wasn't immediate, I think. Not like I awoke a stranger in my own body. The feeling had grown over time. She'd said my mind was remapping itself. Could that be it? Irpisha had told me that my true self was housed up in the sun's core. I considered this, weighing the experience of riding that body against the understanding that grew within me, that this body was not my own. It was not truly me. It was a dream inside of which I walked. Realizing this, I stood a while longer in that shack, wondering if I would soon know the feeling of loss. I did not. The feeling was as if I'd been told of the death of a far-removed relative, some person I'd never met. It's a small feeling, similar to knocking over a cup of water. You say, "Oh, that's a shame," and then go back to whatever you were doing. I wanted to mourn the loss of myself, thought it was the proper thing to do. I thought it would be the human thing to do, but I could not find those sentiments within me. They were gone. My old name had taken them along when it departed. I stepped through the debris until I stood outside of the walls. On the right were the remains of the donkey's pen, a few branches too stubborn to decay strewn in the rough shape of a square. The trough, cracked and split at the joints, would hold nothing more than air now. I continued south. I stood in the center of the village square surrounded by various buildings, the alehouse, several homes, Stavka's forge. A few paces off was where they'd set the feast to commemorate Riza's dominance in the Kroftkrieg. Next to this, Marguerite had been publicly whipped. When you become well acquainted with death, you learn it has a sound, its own unique sound. And I do not speak of that which accompanies the expiration of life. Those sounds are, ironically, still rather lively. A clicking in the throat, if peaceful, coughing and gagging, spluttering, perhaps screaming, if violent. There is much activity in these moments. If there are barbers present, they might scurry about the patient like carrion fowl, hoping to work in one last ministration in the forlorn hope of demonstrating their illusory necessity. Never mind that most of us would have a far easier passage to the afterlife if not for those butchers. The sound of which I speak is that of the body after it is cooled, when it makes the transition from vessel to husk. Then the other noises of the world return, at once subdued and yet more vibrant than before. They come amplified, though the listener might swear his ears were sealed with wax. It comes from a feeling of numbness. You begin to hear the things once ignored because there is nothing else. The breath of the dying is no more. Birds sing again. The wind resumes its rustling of the tree boughs. Wooden beams will again settle and creak. Small creatures go back to skittering through the underbrush. These are the true sounds of death. They happen when the world gets on with itself. For a while, as the soul leaves, it all seems to pause, as if time and space itself realizes that one more person, one more unique and special combination of experiences and ideas, is about to depart this realm forever. All the world surrounding this event pauses and solemnly bows its head. I have seen this even in the heat of battle, when the screaming and the rage of bloodlust was upon us all. We foolish men and women who fought on were too ignorant to notice, but the world still bowed. The world, at least, and the thirsty soil that drank our blood, at least had the decency to notice when we did not. But then death comes and goes, and the world gets on with itself. This is the sound of which I speak, the sound of a world that has forgotten. The world's memory is both short and long. It remembers the mark of the woodsman's axe or the cut of the digger's spade long generations after the wielders of these tools have departed. The men who used them, less so. The marks of man, his actions, may continue to give voice beyond the pyre. The man or woman or child, the author of these acts, disappears. And all that is left are the sounds of the world which has forgotten them. The song of birds, the wind in the tree boughs, the settling of beams, the skittering of small creatures in the underbrush, the long and broken-hearted memory of a forgetful world. These were the sounds I heard standing in the center of Udo's village. I continued south. The sun was dimming as I neared Plotzdorf, soon to transition into a suspended cooling cycle for the evening respite and be replaced by Zintgund's soft light illumination. The boundary did not appear as I remembered it. Various of the temporary structures that had once strained the city's footprint beyond the palisade were now simply gone, or if not gone, abandoned. The old blanket markets, those traveling families who drifted town to town in their Burton wagons to present their wares spread out at the feet of high-nosed passers-by, had all been blown away in a tired wind. By the gate hung a sign with the words, "No Walhazians," scrawled rudely in heavy paint. The guards there held torches to my face despite the yet adequate light, looking for tattoos, I assumed, and said, "Throw back your hood, sir." I did. Their eyes widened in shock as they stumbled backward several paces. One of them drew his sword. "I see I've been here before," I said. "The fuck!" The guard who'd pulled the sword wheezed. His weapon, now a danger to himself as well as those surrounding him for the shaking of his hand, rattled in his loosening grip. I stepped forward and took it by the blade before he could drop it. Then, examining it, I noted, "This is an heirloom. It's seen generational use." The two guards stared at each other, both trembling. They'd begun backing away, but of course the gate was not open, and so they were contained against it. I followed them, wanting to finish my point before they had the chance to bolt. I moved slowly, trying in all aspects of my manner to seem as non-threatening as a man holding a sword might be able, and said, "To drop such an instrument would be a disgrace, not to mention a danger to a well-honed edge. I'd hate to witness such a shame, sir. I wish you'd sheathe this, please." Still holding the blade, I presented the handle to him. He reached toward it slowly, as if mesmerized. When he clasped the hilt, I could feel his trembling in my hand and said, "Let's strengthen that grip, sir. Please show me you can." Then a thing happened in his eyes that I'd only ever seen before on the battlefield. It was that look a man got when he finally decided to accept his fear. Not ignore it or leave it behind, but to own it as something integral of his spirit, and in accepting it, take up his spear and surge forward. It was the bravery that came at the moment man made his peace with death. The guard's mouth closed, his eyes sharpened, and his hand steadied. He nodded at me, shakily at first, then again with confidence. I returned the nod and released his weapon. He sheathed it directly after. "Now," I said, giving attention to both men equally, "I reckon I've been this way before now, and given how excited the two of you seem at noticing me, I'll assume my travels ended here in Plotzdorf." I did not state the obvious. It was clear by the looks I received that we all understood one another. "Assuming either of you, being a part of the city watch, were involved, I'd like you to know I hold you blameless. We all have jobs to do in the end. I understand how these things work, so you needn't fear any ill treatment or retaliation, all right? They stared dumbly at me, blinking like dying fish. This is important, gentlemen. I need to hear that you understand me. Say if you understand me, please. They began nodding, first to each other and then to me. The one who'd taken his sword back said,
Yes, sir. We understand.
Good. Thank you. And now, as to that town, I pointed directly between the two of them to the gate beyond. I'm going in there. I have business to attend in that town there, and I won't be dissuaded. I also intend on doing no harm to anyone within these walls, do you understand? My intentions are entirely peaceful, I give you my word. Please search my person if it will assuage your fears. I will not stop you from doing so. Only stand aside after you do and let me be on with my business. Kill me again if you like, it won't matter. I'll be back. I'll come back again and again and again, as many times as I need to until I get through that goddamned gate and attend to the business I need to attend. I'm not asking your permission here, I'm just advising you for the sake of your own sanity. Open that goddamned gate. They said nothing further to me before banging on the gate with their elbows.
Is he fucking kidding? Hissed a voice from inside the wall.
Open her, you inbred, louse-brained fucking turnip,
the guard in front of me shouted into his shoulder. There came the sound of beams sliding heavily upon each other, followed by a groan and a thud. Then the gate swung inward, the edges of each door rimmed by widely staring eyes. I looked at them all in turn. None seemed to be in a combative mood, so I made them a bow, thanked them for their help, and walked into the city. They let me go. There were changes inside the city wall that I had not been prepared for. Places of business, shops and the like, to which I'd grown accustomed passing by, were no longer in operation, or the signs had been changed to indicate new families owned them. The brothels I'd once frequented had, at some point, become private residences, which made me smile at first, until I wondered what had become of the people who'd lived and worked in those places since the respectable families had moved in. The poor districts were still the poor districts, though. That much, at least, was the same as ever. I strolled toward a more prosperous area, imagining on the way that the people there would be more likely to put up a fuss on my arrival. I left my head uncovered as I walked, taking great care to leave my hands always open at my sides, and noticed eyes lingering upon my person from time to time. I couldn't tell if it was recognition or the simple distrust of strangers that I saw in their glares, but took no chances with them. I did my best to avoid eye contact, but also refused to look away from them if such occurred by chance. I was not challenged, save for the vagrant. I passed as I neared the street named Riverside, which served as an invisible demarcation beyond which a finer climate was enjoyed. There were no gates or walls separating these districts in Plotzdorf. In the city, people were contained to their areas in the same way as had been done in Hedeby, the port city of Walhaz. The people who lived there could smell the outsiders when they came wandering in and took measures to expel them. It was not a Theodiscan or Walhazian behavior. It was all very human.
What is it you want of me? I asked the vagrant when he reached out for my elbow.
A spare bit, sir. Anything'd help.
I have no purse. I'm sorry.
Food, then? Just a bite? Please. Starving, sir.
He wasn't lying. Looking along the length of his forearm, there was more bone than muscle or even skin. Come with me, I said.
Sir?
There's a place I'm headed to on Riverside up that way. I have some business there. I'm not carrying any food with me. If you want to be fed, you'll have to accompany me.
I shouldn't go that way, sir.
Have it your way, then, I continued on.
He hesitated long enough for me to move several paces away before I heard his bare feet flapping up behind me upon the cobblestones.
Won't be well, sir. Won't end well tall.
When does it ever? He looked at me with a low, cunning suspicion. Have you seen me before? I asked.
No, sir.
Then why are you eye-fucking me? His face reddened and he looked away.
Sorry. Didn't realize you was from here. Your clothes. Thought you was Flash.
Still gonna try to rob me?
I wasn't planning on it.
I looked at him.
That right?
Truth. I really do just need a meal.
I nodded. Then let's really you and I agree to go get one this time. Keep close. You'll be all right.
If you say so, sir.
He sighed and clasped his hands behind his back like a cleric. Do you know the area? I asked. He hesitated in answering until I gave him a look.
Sure.
I'm looking for a certain tavern, but it's been so long I disremember the name now. It'd be a big place, popular. Known for the table as equally as the drink.
Ah, you mean the Cradle.
That's the one. You remember the way to get there, of course.
Might could do, but I'll say you'll have the business walking in empty-handed.
That'll be my problem.
As we're agreed, then.
He picked up his pace, and I fell in beside him. What are you called? I asked.
Till, sir. Yourself?
Udo. Till's eyes unfocused briefly.
Now, where the fuck have I heard that name before?
It's just one of those names.
It's not either. That's a rare one, like,
Never mind, I said.
All right.
He trailed off. There's no offense, Till, just never mind.
Course.
Riverside was a rich part of Plotzdorf, as I said. It was the kind of area so prosperous that they never posted guards outside the doors of the nicer places, and most taverns didn't bother to keep muscle on hand because the violent and the drunk were not likely to happen by. They were so well off that dealing with the likes of Till was unthinkable, and so they didn't take steps to prevent it from happening outside of a few regular foot patrols around the area. And I hadn't seen such a patrol yet. I figured they were either avoiding me or one would happen by soon enough. I thought I'd be fine no matter what happened next, but at that point I started walking a little faster, hoping to reach our destination before I had to deal with anyone. I wanted to avoid getting Till into trouble if I could. At any rate, he led us to the front door but stopped at the top step staring at it. He wouldn't reach out to take the handle, so I opened it for him. When the light from inside bathed his face, I saw his skin had paled and whispered, "There's one way to do this right and many to fuck it up. Right now, the best thing you can do is act as though you belong here."
"But my fucking rags," he hissed.
"Nothing for that, but if you walk in there as though you own the place, they'll be momentarily blinded. If we can make it to the bar, I'll take it from there."
"You're out of your fucking mind. There's no way."
"Too late. Now we're walking," I said, grabbing him by the elbow and hauling him through the door as I did. He squawked like an enraged hen at first, but then the eyes of that place were upon us both, and he was out of choices. It was either bear up or run, and I had too tight a grip on him. He bore up. Many silent eyes on us as we crossed the dining floor, chairs carved by masters, cushioned in silk to receive the asses of the affluent who ate there. They looked on me, the outsider, with distrust, though my dress and bearing suggested I was one of their own. Those who noticed Till looked on him with absolute loathing. The barman noticed Till not at all. He stared at me in much the same way the guards at the gate had. I approached the bar, laid my hands down flat upon the top in plain sight, and said, "Feed this man." The barman, whose mouth hung agape, nodded mutely, cleared his throat, and said,
What?
I looked at Till. "Like duck?"
Yeah. Yes, very much.
Duck, I said. Potatoes with it, please.
Nothing to drink?
I looked at Till, who swallowed thickly, and said,
Water.
I nodded at the barman. He said,
Sure.
Sure, sir.
And dizzily waved a hand at a boy who stood close by with a wash rag. The boy darted through a door into the kitchen.
Anything for you, sir?
The barman asked me. You know who I am? I asked. He nodded. Good. I figured that was the way. The rest of these people in here are clueless, aren't they?
Two or three weren't,
he noted.
Saw a few leave in a hurry.
Really? I turned toward the dining area. There were, in fact, a few empty tables.
Huh,
I grunted, turning back to face him. Interesting, but not by much. Most of them are still chomping away, even as they pretend not to be watching our every move, isn't that so? They have no idea. His eyes darted around the room as if he was in search of some savior. Look at me, sir. None of them are going to help you through this. I am. I'm going to help you through this by standing at this bar a while. You'll give me a cup of water to drink and feed this man as I've asked. I don't have any money on me, but that doesn't matter. You're going to serve us anyway. And then, if you do that for me, I promise to quietly drink my water and not disturb any of your paying customers. I'll do this for you out of gratitude, to avoid a scene that would in any way damage this business, even if, say, guards were to appear to collect me and cart me off to jail. Do you understand what I'm telling you? The barman nodded slowly, eyes perplexed. Then he sidled carefully away and ducked back into the kitchen where the boy had disappeared. The barman always knows, I laughed to myself.
Udo, what in fuck are you doing?
Whispered Till. Getting you a meal, Till. You are welcome to thank me at any time.
I'll have the whole fucking watch here.
Good.
Good?
Yes, good. Someone shoved a young woman out of the kitchen. She was carrying two cups of water and watching me like I would spring upon her and tear out her throat with my teeth.
Your drinks, sirs.
Thank you very much, I said.
Supper's out directly,
she squeaked before diving back through the door. Till took a quiet sip of his water.
Good service,
he tried. I smiled at him. A short while later, they came out with his food steaming on a platter. They placed it on the bar and scurried away again. There you are, Till. I'm a man of my word.
Thank you,
he said miserably. You'd better get out of here.
Sir?
They saw you come in with me. Nobody will stop you right now. Later, when the rest of them figure out who I am, they won't leave you alone, maybe ever.
Freak's tits.
I turned around to face the dining room. Many eyes were still unabashedly upon me. I looked at them all slowly in turn. Most of the time they looked away. I whispered, It was my pleasure to meet you, Till. I'm going to go have a seat at one of those empty tables now. I suggest you gather up that food and find a quiet way out the back. You'll be fine. None of these people remember your face, I can promise you.
Thank you. Thank you, Udo.
This time he did not sound miserable. When I was sure he'd gone, I strolled out to one of the empty tables, pulled out a chair, sat, and held my cup of water. I waited.